Today's shiur is Masechta Yuma Daf Yud Daled. We're going to begin on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, the third wide line, the beginning of the third wide line. Tana Rabban, Kain Gadol Makrivayin. If someone loses one of the close relatives for whom he has to sit shiva, Rachmana Litzlan, he's until the kfur, the day of death, L'chala Deis, he's an Oinen. An Oinen doesn't do mitzvahs, doesn't make brachas, and the halacha is that a Kohen Gadol is, the Torah tells us, different than everyone else, and he is allowed to continue doing the avoda when he's an Oinen. However, as we will learn, he too, although he may do the avoda as an Oinen, may not eat kachim as an Oinen. So teaches us the Braisa, Tana Rabbanan, Kohen Gadol Makriv Oinen. A Kohen Gadol could continue doing the avoda when he's an Oinen. However, ve'ena oichel, he may not eat kachim as an Oinen. Now, Rabbi Yehuda makes a statement, actually just two words. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer Kol Hayoyim. Ask the Gemara, my Kol Hayoyim. What does Rabbi Yehuda mean by saying Kol Hayoyim the whole day? Omer Rav, so Rav explains Rabbi Yehuda to be saying, that when the Kohen Gadol is an Oinen, we should bring him from home and tell him, do the Avoda. Specifically, ask him to come back to the Beis HaMikdash and do the Avoda. And Rashi here says the reason is, because while he's at home, he's betzar, he's in grief. Like that, we get his mind off his grief by giving him, telling him to do the Avoda. Others say, since the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to become Tamei, we want him to come home, we want him to come to the Beis HaMikdash, and if he's going to be home, we're concerned he may become Tamei. In the Beis HaMikdash, he won't become Tamei. Amle Abaya, Hashtal Rabbi Yehuda, and there are two ways of learning this Gemara, like Rashi and like Tosfos. First, we're going to learn Rashi's Pshat. Ask Sabaya, Hashtal Rabbi Yehuda, Afgui Mefkinalei. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a regular Koyein that becomes an Oinein during an Avoida, we tell him to stop and leave. The Tanya, it says in a Braisa, Hoya Oimin Makrib Agabim Mizbeach, if a Koyein Hedget was on the Mizbeach doing the Avoida, and unfortunately he hears that he became an Oinen. The Aloch is Meniach Avoidosoi V'yotzei. Stops where he is and goes out. The Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi Omer Yigmar. Rabbi Yosi says, no, finish what he's doing and then he should leave. So according to Rashi, the Gemara's question is, here by Kohen Hedyot, Rabbi Yehuda says that we tell him to stop the Avoida, if he's in the middle of the Avoida, if he's an Oinen. And by Kohen Gadol, we're going to tell him to specifically go to the Beis HaMikdash to do the Avoida. It doesn't seem to make sense. So Tosfos, and Tosfos Yishonim, asks on Rashi's Pshat, doesn't seem to make sense. They're talking apples and oranges. Rabbi Yehuda is speaking about a Kohen Gadol in the first part of today's Gemara. And this price is talking about a Kohen Hedyot. So what are you asking from a Kohen Hedyot to a Kohen Gadol? Therefore, Tosfos and Tosfos Yishonim say that this Braisa is talking also about a Kohen Gadol. And in this Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda says that if a Kohen Gadol is in the middle of doing the Avoida, we tell him to stop, go and leave. And here, Hakui said that not only don't we tell him to stop, leave, we actually tell him to go from home to do the Avoida. How do we understand Rashi? The question that the Tosfos and Tosfos Yishonim ask in Rashi, very strong question. So Ritva explains as follows. He says that the Isser for Kohen Hedyot to do Avoida and the Heter for Kohen Hedyot are very linked. Why is a Kohen Hedyot not allowed to do Avoida? Because a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to eat Kachim. So they're very linked, their two statuses. So if the status of a Kohen Hedyot is so strong that he has to stop the Avoida, certainly we can't have such a disparity where the Kohen Gadol should be able to continue, not only continue, but actually come specifically to do Avoida. Now, there's an interesting 2 points. Rabbi Yossi says that the way we're learning, like Rashi, that if he's in the middle of the Avoida, he should complete the Avoida when he finds out he became an Oinon. So there are two reasons given by the Mefarshim in explaining Rabbi Yossi, because that's the halacha. One is that as soon as a kohen does an Avoida, it's a yontif for him. The Meremi Sod explains this. And we know that on a yontif, there is no concept of an Inus. So if the kohen is in the middle of doing the Avoida, it's his yontif. And a yontif, there's no aninus, that's why he should complete. That's one way of understanding Rabbi Yossi Shita. Another way of understanding Rabbi Yossi Shita, the Mefarshim explain, is that aninus doesn't disqualify the Avoida. Aninus is a state, but it doesn't disqualify the Avoida. So once he's in the middle of the Avoida, we allow him to complete it, and then the aninus begins. Now actually, the Machlokes of Rashi and Tosfos that we quoted could be relevant, Rachman l'tzlan l'alocha l'maisa. The Mishnah Berurah discusses a shaila, that let's say somebody's in the middle of davening, and while he's in the middle of davening, he finds out he became an oinon. One of his close relatives passed away. Does he finish davening or not? So the Shvus Yaakov says that at first glance, perhaps the shaila is the machloikis of Rashi and Tosfos. According to Tosfos, that says that this Bryce is talking about a kohen gadol, but a kohen hedyot maybe would be allowed to complete his avoida. Maybe. So therefore the same thing a regular person could finish his tefillah. On the other hand, Rashi says that this Bryce is talking about, in other words, according to Tosfos, let's just again explain. Rabbi Yossi is talking about a kohen gadol should complete his avoida, but a kohen hedyot should not complete his avoida. So if he's not complete his avoida, he shouldn't complete the tefillah. On the other hand, Rashi who explains that this Braisa is talking about even a kohen hedyot, and Rabbi Yossi is telling us that even a kohen hedyot, as we just explained a minute ago, could complete the avoida. Similarly, a person davening would be allowed to complete his tefillah even though he became an oinon. But then, other mefarshim say that maybe the comparison between a regular person davening and a kohen doing the avoida is not a perfect comparison. That's an avoida. An avoida is not to be done by aninus. Tefillah may be different, and you can argue it both ways. Interestingly enough, the Mishnah Berurah, when he discusses the Shaila, he says, Yesh Oisrim, V'yesh Matirim. He also doesn't make a conclusive ruling. So now, we're back to where we started. Rabbi Yehuda started the shiur that a kohen gadol does the avoida with his oinon. He doesn't eat. And then Rabbi Yehuda made a statement, Kol HaYoyim. We need to understand what does Kol HaYoyim mean. El Amar Rav Mai Kol HaYoyim. What does Kol HaYoyim mean? Loim Mishena Oivet Kol HaYoyim. That although Al Pidin he's allowed to do the avoida when he's an oinon, Chazal made a gzera that he shouldn't. And the Pesach Tshuva, in fact, quotes the Tshuva's Chavis Yor that says that although the Torah specifically allows a kohen gadol to avoida when he's Oinen, Rachman Otzlan, the Rabbanon have a right to make a gzeir that he shouldn't. Why? Gzeir Shema Yoichel. We're concerned that if he's going to do the Avoida, he may come to eat the Kachim, which he's not allowed to. How do we know he's not allowed to eat Kachim? Because if the Halacha is the Meiser may not be eaten. When somebody's an Oinen, as we say by Vidi Meiser, Lo Yichalti Be'oini Mimenu, certainly Kachim may not be eaten. Rabbi Yehuda makes such a gzera that a kohen is not allowed to do the avoida. A kohen gadol is not allowed to do the avoida when he's an oinon, because he may come to eat kachim. But now, let's learn our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af isha ches maskinala. We prepare for the kohen gadol a backup wife. Shema Thomas Ishtai. Maybe his wife will die. Now let's understand. Vi maisi Ishtai. What is our Mishnah saying? That even though his wife died of an avoida, we still allow him to continue doing the avoida. And like goes Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda doesn't say that the kohen gadol who's now an oinon because his wife died should stop and not do the avoida because Shema Yoichel. Answers the Gemara, you can't compare Yom Kippur to every other situation. Amle, hachi hashta. Hasam, kiven the Yom Kippurim who, since we're dealing with Yom Kippur, the kula amaloi ka'achli, that no one is eating Yom Kippur. What's the reason we don't want the kohen to do the avoida? Because if he comes to do the avoida, he may come to eat. But Yom Kippur, nobody's eating. So who nami lo asa lemeichel? He won't eat. And therefore, even though he's an oinon, I let him do the avoida. However, on any other day of the year, hocha, the kula alma achli, everybody's eating, hu nami osla meichel, he may come to eat, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda made a gzeira that a kohen gadol who's an oinen should not do ravoida, because he may chas v'sham come to eat the kachin. So the first question is, what is it to eat on Yom Kippur? What kabbanas are going to eat? All the kabbanas that are burned on Yom Kippur were burnt, there's nothing to eat. So the Mefarshim give two examples. One is if Yom Kippur comes on Shabbos, there's lechem upon him. And the other example they give is that we know that a carbon shlomim may be eaten for 2 days and a night. Shnei yom v'layla echad. So if they brought a carbon shlomim on Erev Yom Kippur, so that carbon shlomim may still be eaten theoretically on Yom Kippur, and that would be the thing that we would maybe make a gzeira. Yet the Gemara says, then since no one is eating, we don't have to make such a gzeira, because since no one's eating, he won't eat either. The Magen Avraham asks, perhaps from here we see that a kohen who's doing, even though he's not allowed to eat, is still allowed to touch the food. And that's why we're concerned that he may come to eat besides in Yom Kippur. So the question is, there's always a question, is chametz allowed to be touched on Pesach? And Magen Avraham says, perhaps from this Gemara, we have a raya that you're allowed to touch chametz on Pesach. Just like the kohen is allowed to touch food, even though he's not allowed to eat it. So they explain that you can't compare Pesach, Kohen Gadol, Pesach to Kohen Gadol. First of all, we have a rule, Ein Shvus B'Migdash. We don't make so many gzeiros in Beis HaMikdash. Secondly, the Kohen Gadol being so busy doing the Avoida, we have less of a concern that if he's going to eat, touch the food, they'll eat it, versus someone else during the Pesach, if we allow him to touch chametz, may come to eat it. The Mitzvah Eison asks a very interesting shaila. He says, the same Rabbi Yehuda that we have in this Gemara, we learned the Masechet Pesachim. In Masechet Pesachim, Rabbi Yehuda discusses that let's say somebody forgot to do Bedikas Chametz in time, before Pesach. And now it's Pesach. May he do Bedikas Chametz or not? So Rabbi Yehuda's demand on it says that don't do Bedikas Chametz. Why? We're concerned that if he'll do Bedikas Chametz, he may come to, and he'll find Chametz, he may eat it. So the question is, why over here don't we have the same concern? So the Mefarshim answer, the Mitzvah Eisen answers, it's very different. Pesach, everybody's eating. They're not eating chametz, but they're eating. So if somebody finds chametz, we're concerned he chas v'shalom may come to eat it. On the other hand, on Yom Kippur, where no one is eating, so if he handles food, that doesn't mean he's going to eat it. And interestingly enough, I saw the Shailos HaTshuvos Forum make the following distinction. They say, let's say someone's in shul, and he has a child that he wants to give food to. There's no problem with touching food. He's not going to come to eat the food. If he comes chas v'shalom to eat the food in Yom Kippur, all the people around him will tell him Yom Kippur. But let's say someone who works in a different setting where everybody is eating and there's no one there to remind him not to eat, he has to have some sort of a reminder that it's Yom Kippur, that he shouldn't come to put any food into his mouth. He needs some sort of a reminder. Ask the Gemara, based on what we learned yesterday. We're saying that it's theoretically possible that the Kohen Gadol could become an Oinen. Why his wife dies? Ask the Gemara, let's remember what we learned in the previous shiur. V'ki agav Michael al-Ninus, will he become an Oinen? For Hamigrisha, the way we explained yesterday's Gemara, he divorces his wife, that he shouldn't end up with two wives. So the wife that dies is the wife that's divorced. On a divorced wife, there is no Ninus. So what's the concern that he's an Oinen? Answers the Gemara, Neda Ninus Lechaile, yes, he's not an Oinen, a Trudim Mitrid, but he's still disturbed about that his wife or former wife died. And Rashi explains, the Torah says regarding eating Kachim, Lecha Nesatim Lemashcha, you should eat it Lemashcha with greatness, and not when you're disturbed. So that's why he's not, there would be a concern anyway. The Tosfos Shoshanim asked two questions on Rashi, and his answer has very interesting halachic ramifications, but I want to emphasize, I'm saying this lahalocha v'loy lemaisa. If somebody would chas v'shalom have the shayla, he should ask a rav. The Tosfos Shoshanim first of all asked that all throughout Shas, whenever we have the pasuk of lemashcha, we say it means that the kabana should be eaten in a very distinguished manner, roasted, eat it with spices. All of a sudden here Rashi says lemashcha means eat it when you're not disturbed. And then Tosfos Shoshanim asks that according to Rashi, let's say a kohen had a bad day in business. lost money in the stock market, so he shouldn't be allowed to eat kachim. It's not, he's torah. Where do we find such a concept? So that's why the Tosfos Yeshayahu has a different concept altogether. The Kohen Gadol and his wife were very happily married. Why did they set up this divorce? Because as we learned yesterday, because we need a married, but we can't have a married to two wives. So when this wife dies, technically she's divorced. But theoretically they're not divorced. Theoretically they're a happy couple. And that's why he's really an Einim. So what's Tosfos Yeshayahu saying? Tosfos Yeshayahu is essentially saying that a couple who's divorced, but only got divorced because of technicality, the husband would be an Einim when the wife dies. For example, I saw a Shaila. The Shaila happened by the war. There was a couple who were happily married, but they saw that big tsaros were coming. So the husband told the wife, who knows what will be? And if we separate, I don't want you to become a guna. So I'm giving you a divorce. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps. We survive the war. We'll get remarried. And what happens during that time? The wife dies. Is he an Einan? Does he sit Shiva or not? Perhaps he does. Because they didn't get divorced because they wanted to be divorced. And again, I say it's La Locha, not La Maisa. So that's why it may be that even though he's divorced technically, he's still an Einan because theoretically they were a happy couple. But there's a flip side to that. The Mashal says, what will be the halacha if there's a couple that's in the midst of getting divorced? They don't get along. They're getting divorced not in a fine, in a happy situation. Most divorces. And one of them died. So technically they're married. Though they sit Shiva on each other. So he says they don't sit Shiva. Or for example, we discussed this yesterday. Let's say there's a hetamei rabbanim. A husband got for his wife a hetamei rabbanim. Like we explained yesterday, hetamei rabbanim means that she could pick up the divorce, but she didn't pick up the divorce. And while they're in that situation, the wife dies, or the husband dies. Do they sit Shiva on each other or not? According to the Mashal, they wouldn't sit Shiva, even though technically they're still married. Says the Mishnah, Kol Shivas Hayomim, all 7 days that we've been discussing prior to Yom Kippurim, who's Zayrik Sadam? We have the Kohen Gadol work in the base of Migdash to practice and prepare for the Avodah. So as Emes points out, that the Mishnah starts off with Zrikas Adam. There are two things the Mishnah is missing that precede Zrikas Adam. The first thing that precedes it is Trumas Hadeshen. That the first thing every day is that they clear the ash. So from here, the Sfasem says is a proof that the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur did not have to do Trumas Hadeshen. But the next question is, what about Shechita? What about Shechita? The Kohen Gadol had a Shechita Karban Tamid. Why doesn't he have to practice? So I saw two answers. One answer is, if the Kohen Gadol was a Shaychit, so he knows how to Shecht. And if he's not a Shaychit, he can't become a Shaychit in 1 week. It takes a lot more work. Another teretz, we're going to learn about it tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem, is that the Shechita of a Karban on Yom Kippur was different than all year. Usually, when an animal is slaughtered, you cut both Simonim all the way. On Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol only cut most of the Simon, because he wanted to preserve his strength. And therefore, since it's not the same Shechita that's going to take place during these 7 days, as on Yom Kippur, there's no point in practicing something that he's not going to practice on Yom Kippur the same way. There's a very interesting Rambam in the Pirush Mishnayos, which also has interesting halachic ramifications. Rashi says that what's the reason the Kohen Gadol for 7 days does this? To practice. Rashi says, Kedei shirei rogel u'mezumen la'avodas Yom Kippurim. The Rambam adds a few words, very powerful. Yom Kippur is a hard fast. If he's prepared for it, he practiced, it won't be so hard. What's this relevant? The Stechemid discusses the Shaila, if someone's allowed to take, before Yom Kippur, different types of remedies to make the fast easier. Stechemid says it's Osir. From the Rambam we see that it's Mutter. The Rambam says the whole point of the Kohen Gadol practicing for this whole week is that Yom Kippur should be an easier fast. So you see that you're allowed to do something before Yom Kippur to make the fast easier for you. Only Rav. So according to this, the week before he doesn't.
No, but if the Kohen Gadol didn't know how to
chef, he has to learn. Or Matt Asak Tyrus. and he brings the Ketairis, or Meitav is a Neiris. Meitav is a Neiris means that, so there's machloikis how to learn Meitav is a Neiris. According to Rambam, Meitav is a Neiris means to clean out the candles and also light them. According to Rashi, Meitav is a Neiris means to clean out the candles. But the Mefarshim ask, according to Rashi, why doesn't he need practice and how to light the menorah? So they answer that from the time of Shimon HaTzadik, the Kohen Gadol always lit the menorah in the morning anyway. So since he did it all year round, he didn't need practice, he knew how to do it. V'shak u'makar v'saroish v'saregel. He brings up to the Mizbeach the head and the foreleg, forearm of the carbon tumid. Now there's a machlokes mefarshim how to understand this line. Some, the Tosfos Yontif explains, that really brings up the all the limbs of the animal. The Mishnah only mentions the Rosh Vareg because those are the two first and most prominent limbs. But really brings everything up. Others explain that he only has to bring up Rosh Vareg because the entire purpose is just to practice. And practice can be accomplished with the Rosh Vareg alone. V'shak kol yom, the rest of the year. And Rosh L'Hakrav Makrav, whenever the Kohen Gadol, even though we learned and will learn in Mitzvah Hashem, that the avoid in the Beis HaMikdash was distributed through a lottery system, the Kohen Gadol is not subject to the lottery system. If he wants to be makriv, he could be makriv. And Mefarshim explained, the Ratzvah said the same thing with Ketairis. Whenever he wants to bring the Ketairis, he has the right to. So Kohen Gadol, makriv chelik b'roish, he has a right to take, to bring a carbon whenever he wants, the noitel chelik b'roish. The same thing for dividing up the various foods, the various kabbanas, he doesn't get part of the lottery, he could take whatever he wants. The Marie Kirkus says, interesting, not only does the Kohen Gadol have a right to take whatever he wants, but he says even a bigger chiddush. Let's say the Kohen Gadol didn't do the avoida, but he says when it comes to get the food, to divide up the karbonis, there he does want. He still has the right to take the chelik, even though he didn't do the avoid of the akrava. However, the Mefarshim point out, this is only the avoid of the karbonis, not Truma's. Kohen is entitled to Truma. There, the Kohen Gadol doesn't have any special privileges that he could come say to Yisrael, I have first rights to your Truma. Starts the Gemara. Man Tana, who is the Tana of our Mishnah? Amar Rav Chizda, like Rabbi Kiva. Our Mishnah will not follow Rabbi Kiva's Shita. Dear Rabbi Kiva holds, Ha'amah Tosh Nafalov Hazar, that a person who's Tor, that on him fell the Mechatas, the ash and water of the Paraduma, Tamasai. He automatically becomes Tamei. So if according to Bekiva, every one of the 7 days we learned earlier in the Masechta Ramei says, they spritzed on him the Mechatas, so he would always be Tamei. So Heichar Avad Avoida. We want him to practice the Avoida for this week before Yom Kippur, but it's impossible for him to practice the Avoida. It's impossible for him to practice the Avoida. He's Tamei because they spritzed on him. So Farshim asked, perhaps our Mishnah is not going like Reb Meir. So the answer, first of all, Stam Mishnah is Rameya. That's one answer I saw. Another answer is that since, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, the Makar that a Kohen Gadol is sequestered for 7 days is from Miluim, and by the Yimei Miluim they had Hazor every day, so it makes sense to say that they had Hazor every day by these 7 days. The Chazan Ish asks, why don't we say Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur? That whenever we need to say that somebody's Tameh, that we waive it. So they say it's not Tzibur, it's only one person, it's the Kohen Gadol. The Tanya, the Hiza Atal Atamei, teaches us Rabbi Kiva, Al Atamei, if you put the Mechatas on somebody who's Tamei, Tahor, he becomes Tahor. However, Al Tahor, if you put it on somebody who's really Tahor, he becomes Tamei, Div Rabbi Kiva. The Chomer disagreed. Chomer Aymrim, Ein Advarim Halal Amurim, the Pasuk is teaching us something else altogether. El Dvarim HaMekavim Tumah. Mahi, what does that mean? Just in way of introduction. The halacha is that the mechatos, if they're used for hazor, if they're used for spritzing, they're fine. But if they're used for work, they become disqualified. Kritna, like the Mishnah teaches us. Niskavan lahazis al behema. Even though somebody intended to use the mechatos to spritz them on an animal, which is not susceptible to tumah, it's not susceptible to hazor, v'hiz ala adam, and then they actually spritz on a person, im yesh be'ezav, if there's still some mechatas left in the grass that's used for spritzing, yishna, you could use it. The grass, this water did not become disqualified. However, niskaven lahazis al adam, if you intend to spritz on a person, vihiz ala behema, and then you spritz on an animal, So that means that you worked with the water, because animal, as we said a moment ago, is not something that you're supposed to do azon. So if you have leftover mechatis in that grass, lo yishna, you shouldn't use it over. So that's what they use the pasuk. My time of the Rekiva, what does Rekiva say? That this mechatis has this interesting qualification, this interesting quality, that if you spritz it on somebody who's tar, that person becomes tameh. Because the pasuk says, v'hiza hatar ala tameh. Says Rabbi Kiva, nichter rachmona v'hiza hatar olav, that you spritz on him. My ala tameh. What did the Torah say that you're spritzing on somebody's tameh? Of course, who do you spritz the mechatis on if not on somebody who's tameh? Shmamina, the Torah teaches us, ala tameh tahor. If you spritz the mechatis on somebody who's tameh, he becomes tar. However, v'ala tar, if you spritz it on somebody who's tar, he becomes tameh. And Rabbanan, like we said a moment ago, they say the pasuk teaches us a different din. It's come to teach us this din that if you use it for an animal, use it for a person. But if you spritz the mechatis on somebody who's tar, it certainly doesn't affect him. Because I say a kal v'chomer. Im ha'atomei. If the mechatis have the power that if you spritz him on somebody who's tamei, he becomes tar, ala tar. If you spritz it on somebody who's tar, lo kolshkein, that he becomes, that he remains tahar. So Rabbanan is saying something that's very sensible. Why does Rabbi Kiva respond? Rabbi Kiva says, you're right. What I said doesn't necessarily make sense. But Hainu the Kama, Shlomo, that's exactly what Shlomo HaMelech said in Koheles regarding the Paraduma. I thought that I'm smart, but I'm not. I can't figure out the din of Paraduma. What did he mean, says Rabbi Kiva? What he meant was that if you spritz the Paraduma on somebody who's Tamei, he becomes Tahor. And if you spritz the Paraduma on somebody who's Tahor, he'll become Tamei. There's an interesting marshal I saw from the Dibur Magid in explaining Shlomo HaMelech's approach to the Paraduma. Like always, he says it with a marshal. He says there were three people who had the same disease. And they went to the doctor, and the doctor prescribed the same medicine for all three of them, the same regimen. The first person wasn't a very learned person. The doctor told him what to do. He did what he was told. The second person says, this doctor doesn't know what he's doing, so I'm not going to follow what he says. And he died. The third person was also a very smart person. He says, I don't understand what the doctor is doing, but since I don't have anything better, and I have nothing better what to do, I'm going to follow his instructions anyway. And he also got well. Says the Dibur Magid, Shlomo HaMelech, the Torah says that a king is not allowed to marry more than 18 wives. So Shlomo HaMelech said, why? Because if you marry more than 18 wives, they may take you off the right path. Ani, what he called, I will marry them, he said, v'loy osur, and I have nothing to worry about. What happened? He was smarter than God. What happened? Lipsoif hitus levavoy. We know that they took him off. That was regarding the mitzvah of not marrying more than 18 wives. When it came to Paraduma, Shlomo HaMelech learned his lesson. He says, I don't understand Paraduma, but I learned my lesson. You have to do what Hashem says anyway. Rabbanim say, regarding what the Shlomo HaMelech said, Amata echem avihi rechayke mena, for a different din. Hahu lemaza ulemazan ulaftar. The person who actually spritzes the paraduma, or gets spritzed by the paraduma, is tar, v'negeya ben tameh. But somebody who just touches the may, paraduma becomes tameh. Ask the Gemara, or mazet tar, is it true that somebody spritzes the may, chatis remains tar? But see, there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, or mazet may anido yechabis begodav, that the person that spritzes the paraduma water has to clean his clothing. Not only is he tamei, but he's the tamei to the degree that even his clothing must be washed. Answers the Gemara, my maza. What does the Torah mean, maza? It means negeya. It doesn't mean somebody who actually spritzes. It means somebody who touches. Ask the Gemara, there's a vaksiv maza, vaksiv negeya. There's another pasuk for negeya. I can't say that this pasuk means negeya. I already have another pasuk. Void, furthermore, Mazza, regarding the Mazza, the Torah says by Kibbutz that he's tummy to the degree that his clothing have to be washed. By Kibbutz begodim. Nogeya, like by Kibbutz begodim. He has to be matar himself. He has to go to the mikveh. He has to wait Harav Shemesh. But he not, doesn't need to clean his clothing. Says the Gemara, El Mai Mazah, what does Mazah mean? Noisei. It means the person that carries it. So according to Rabbanan, just to review, and this is what Tosfos teaches us, the person who spritzes the mechatis remains tahar. The person who gets spritzed, whether he's tamei or tahar, gets tahar. The person who carries it has to becomes tamei and even has to wash his clothing. The person who touches it becomes tamei, but he doesn't have to wash his clothing. Ask the Gemara, if when the Torah said mazah, it meant noisei, why did you say mazah? You should have said, why did you say mazah? You should have said noisei. V'nicht rachmana noisei. If the Torah meant the person who's carrying it, so say carrying. Why do you say spritzing? My tamik said mazah. Answers the Gemara, k'mashmon debi'in and shir hazah. That teaches that when does the person who carries it become tamei? When he carries a significant amount that is enough to spritz. Now Tosfos asks, according to Rabbanan, everything is fine and well, but still, the Torah says the word mazah, that somebody who spritzes becomes tamei. Why? And now the Gemara says all sorts of explanations how we could explain the Pesukim. But why don't we just stick to Pashup Shat? Isn't Pashup Shat the mazah, the person who spritzes is tamei? So Tosfos answers, what forced Rabbanan into this Pshat, because the Torah says, v'hiza hator ala tamei, that the person who spritzes remains tar. So we can't say that the mazah becomes tamei when the Torah calls him tar. It must be that mazah means nisei.
Except that now he's the tar, the other one's tamei. Once he spritzes, the other will be tamei.
No, but he's our tar means that he's tar all throughout. Ask the Gemara, there's a machlokes in Masechta Zvachim if there is a requirement for a minimum amount of water. So ha'nich l'mandam hazot tzrichashir, according to mandam that says there is a minimum amount of water required. So that's what the Torah is telling us, that there is no tumma by the noisei until he holds that minimum amount of water. El l'mandam im sechtes vachim that held, hazva ein tzrichashir, ma'ik l'meim, that's what the pasuk can't be talking about a shir. There is no shir. Says the Gemara, fi l'mandam hazot ein tzrichashir, even according to mandam that says there is no minimal amount, what does that mean, there is no minimal amount? Hani mila gabe de gavra. There is no minimal amount that you have to actually spritz. Av b'mona. How much should be in the vessel holding the mechatis? Everybody agrees that there is a minimal amount. Tzrichashir. The tnan, kam yehe behen v'yeh b'tekezah. How much does it have to be considered that there's enough water? Kadesh yitboil, roshi gvolim v'yaza. And right, Rashi explains, it's enough water that you dip the grass into it, some of the water gets absorbed by the grass, and you still have water left over afterwards. There's an interesting machlokes rishonim. Here we're saying that regarding the person carrying the mechatos, you have to have kedei hazor, that it should become tamei. What, but regarding nogeya, the Gemara doesn't say if you have to have a shir hazor or not. So it's machlokes rishonim if the nogeya also has to have a shir hazor to become tamei, or even without a shir hazor, he'll become tamei also. Abaye Amar, afil tamei Rabbi Akiva. We go back to the beginning of the sugya. We said that our Mishnah can't go according to Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because according to Rabbi Akiva, as soon as you spritz the mechatis on the kohen who's tar, on the kohen gadol who's tar, he becomes tamei. So how will he be able to do that avodah all these days? He's tamei. Abaye comes up with a practical way of doing it. Davar avodah kula yoma. Let him practice, let him do that avodah all day. When will we spritz the mechatis on him? Ulefanya madale, right before evening, we'll spritz the mechatis. V'tovel, he'll immediately go into the mikveh. Immediately afterwards, he'll have Harav Shemesh, and the next morning, he's good as new. So the whole day, he could do the avoida, and he could also have the mechatis to make him tamei at the end of the day. So he could have both. So we learned in the Mishnah, or maktes ektiris, or meitav zanayris, that what was the order? First Ketiris, and then the Neris. Alma, so what do we see? Ketiris Bereisha, for how the Neris. First there's the Ketiris, and then the Neris. V'minu, asked the Gemara, there's a Mishnah, Masechta Tamid, that says, the Mishnah there discusses the pious, the lottery that we made amongst the Kahanim, who's going to get what job. So the Mishnah says, Misha Zoch B'dishnam is Be'echa Pnimi. The first lottery was, who's going to clear out the ashes? Misha Zoch B'Menayra, so here it says that the menorah precedes the ketiris, not the ketiris preceding the menorah. Om Rav Huna, so Rav Huna responds, Man Tana Tomid, who is the Tana Masechta Tomid? Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah. It's going to Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah. That's the Mishnah Masechta Tomid, but the Mishnayis and Masechta Yuma don't follow Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah's Shita. Ask the Gemara, Vivcha Shmin Alei, I'll prove to you that the Mishnayis and Masechta Tomid cannot follow Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah Shita. The Tanan, we learned there in Masechta Tamid in describing how the blood of the carbon Tamid is applied on the Mizbeach, and we'll talk about this a lot more in Mitzvah Shem and Daf Tez Vav. It says, Bala Lekerem Mizrachat Tzvainis, he comes to the northeast corner, Nisen, Mizrachat Tzvainis. So he puts blood on that corner and it spreads to two sides. Then he comes to Meravah Doraimus. Then he comes to the southwest corner. And nice Meravah Doraimus. So the Mishnah Masech the Talmud says that how is the blood of the carbon Talmud put? Two applications, one in the northeast corner, one in the southwest corner. V'tanila. However, we learned another brisa. Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah, Mishana B'Talmud. Rav Shimon Mitzvah said that the way the Talmud was, the blood was applied. Mizrachat Tzfainis. First he put on the northeast corner. Noisim is Rachat Tzfainis. You should put on the northeast corner. Then Maravis, Deroimus. When it comes to the southeast corner, don't put it on the corner. Rather, Noisim Maravah, Vakach Noisim Deroimus. Put it actually on the west wall and the south wall. So what do we see? That the Mishnah, Masechta Tamid, says that according to the Mishnah, how is the blood of the Karm Tamid applied? It's put on the two corners. And Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah clearly does not hold that that's the way the blood is applied. Rather, he says the way the blood is applied is the northeast corner, and then the west wall and the south wall. So how could I say that the Mishnayis and Masechta Tamid are going according to Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah? Elam Rabbi Yochanan, man Tana say the Yuma. Who is the Tana of our Mishnayis? Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah. So the way Tosfos explains like this. They had a tradition that the Mishnayis in one Masechta following Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah. They just didn't know which one. So first Rav Huna tried to say that it was the Mishnayis and Masechta Tamid that were following Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah. Manat Gemara proved that that isn't correct. So the Manat Gemara tries another approach and says that the Mishnayis and Masechta Yuma are following Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah. Mishnayis and Masechta Tamid are following a different Tana, and therefore we have no stira. Masechta Tamid holds actually that the Tyrus followed the Menorah, Masechta Yuma holds that Ketairos preceded the Menorah.